Book Notes, Fall 2008, Volume 4, Issue 2. Book Notes, ISSN 1554-3609, is published twice per year by the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library, 20 Park Street, Concord, New Hampshire, 03301-6314, copyright 2008. All rights reserved. Reproduction in whole or in part without permission is prohibited. http://www.nh.gov/nhsl/bookcenter. Inside this issue, New Hampshire Books column. Thomas Bailey Aldrich, Letters About Literature. Peterborough Town Library. Celebrating Kalevala, Antiquarian Book Fair Coupon. Award Notes, The Big Read, Fitzgerald. Join the New Hampshire Center for the Book. Poetry Place, The Big Read, Twain. Reader Recommendations, National Book Festival. New Hampshire Writers Project celebrates 20 years. By Carla Garrick, Program Manager, NHWP. This October, the New Hampshire Writers Project, NHWP, launches its 20th anniversary celebrations by bringing a three-day literary festival to Portsmouth as part of the New Hampshire Writers Trail. On October 23rd, 24th, and 25th, 2008, the Portsmouth Literary Festival will showcase the vibrant literary community of New Hampshire's Seacoast region with readings, walking tours, shows, panel discussions, and a few fun new ways to explore the craft of writing. Portsmouth is the fifth location on the New Hampshire Writers Trail, a statewide literary meander that highlights the accomplishments of writers within a specific New Hampshire region and brings nationally acclaimed visiting writers to the Granite State. In the past, the New Hampshire Writers Trail has been to Wilmot to host the 2006 Kearsarge Poetry Festival, to Keene in summer 2006 to celebrate the work of Ernest Hebert, and to Claremont and Laconia in 2005 to explore the literal and fictional worlds of Sarah Josepha Hale and Ruth Doan McDougall. This year, the trail travels to Portsmouth, the town where NHWP began. In 1988, the New Hampshire Writers Project started in the Button Factory on Islington Street in Portsmouth. Quote, "In the winter," end quote, said Kathy Wirtz, executive director of NHWP, quote, "it was so cold the staff had to wear mittens. Things have, fortunately," end quote, she added with a smile, quote, "warmed up since then," end quote. The nonprofit organization has grown to include more than 750 members throughout New Hampshire and the surrounding states. NHWP fosters writers at all levels of development, from beginners to Pulitzer Prize winners and U.S. Poets Laureate, as well as readers who appreciate great writing and books. Now they are ready to celebrate. NHWP, working with community partners such as Strawberry Bank, South Church, the Music Hall, River Run Bookstore, the Portsmouth Athenaeum, Seacoast Repertory Theater, the Press Room, and The Wire, will present 3 days of jam-packed excitement. Quote, "The involvement of our local partners," end quote, said Wirtz, quote, "is testament to the Seacoast's dynamic literary community. Their dedication and enthusiasm in shaping this event are immeasurable. This is what NHWP is about, building community, reaching out, sharing the literary arts with others," end quote. Wirtz said she is particularly proud to have more than 12 Seacoast writers involved in the festival, quote, "It shows the wealth of writing talent on the Seacoast and, with other New Hampshire writers on board as well, within the whole state," end quote. On the evening of Saturday, October 25th, the Portsmouth Literary Festival will culminate with an on-stage interview with visiting novelist Tom Parada. Parada, dubbed, quote, "an American Chekhov," end quote, by the New York Times, is the author of several books, including Election and Little Children. Both were made into major motion pictures. Parada was nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe for his adaptation of Little Children. He will read from his latest novel, The Abstinence Teacher, and answer questions from the audience. Quote, "Leading up to this exciting finale," end quote, said Wirtz, quote, "are several events sure to inspire the writer and reader in all of us," end quote. In Poetry, People, and Place, Creating Poetic Consciousness, Maxine Kuman, Patricia Farnoli, and Elizabeth Canese will discuss the role of poetry in community. These three poets laureate have raised the poetic consciousness of the United States, New Hampshire, and Portsmouth. Their readings and panel discussion, which will be moderated by Marie Harris, will be followed by a Q&A. Hero Award winner Valerie Cunningham and historian Jerry Ann Bogus will lead a panel discussion on History Is Now, Discovering Portsmouth's Black Heritage. Afterwards, attendees can join Valerie Cunningham on a guided walking tour of Portsmouth's Black Heritage sites. In Ink Chronicles, History Across Genre, children's author Julie Baker, novelist Robert Begiebing, poet Martha Carlson Bradley, and historian J. Dennis Robinson will reveal the discoveries they have made about writing on their journeys back through time. For the younger crowd, Punk Rock Poetry, a workshop for teens, will show teens ages 13 through 17 how to create razor-sharp poems. Gain new perspectives on writing at Speakeasy, From the Page to the Stage, when Genevieve Achill, Roland Goodbody, duo M. Marguerite Matthews and Greg Gathers, and Pat Spaulding perform original works and discuss the intricacies of performance-based writing. Quote, feeling adventurous, end quote, asked Wirtz. Quote, then join us on Friday night at the press room for the first ever New Hampshire Literary Idol, end quote. 10 hopefuls armed with their best 500-word flash fictions will face a panel of idol judges, Jim Kelly, Mike Kimball, and Catherine Toller, with a special appearance by Rebecca Rule. Writer's Happy Hour at River Run Bookstore provides an opportunity to mingle with local and visiting authors. Attendees can enjoy scintillating conversation, good food, and have books signed. River Run Bookstore will also present scheduled readings throughout the festival. For the visually inclined, there is Wild Card Movies at the Music Hall. And a tour of the Athenaeum, the oldest cultural organization in Portsmouth, is also being offered. The Word Fair at South Church will connect writers, publishers, readers, and literary nonprofits. The fair features information booths, raffle prizes, informal discussions, and an open mic. The festival's informative and fun literary map allows attendees to explore the world of words, self-guided literary walking tour. This 8-page guide includes a program of the weekend's events, fascinating facts about literary sites, and an easy-to-follow map. The map and program will be available at local Portsmouth stores and in the Wire in the weeks leading up to the festival. Quote, we want you to gain new insight into writing, end quote, said Wirtz. Quote, we want you to be inspired to be ready to write, to read, and to celebrate the rich literary heritage of Portsmouth, the Seacoast, New Hampshire, and New England. Come celebrate the craft and joy of writing with us, end quote. The NHWP Portsmouth Literary Festival is made possible in part by generous support from Lincoln Financial, River Run Bookstore, Riverstone Resources, New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, New Hampshire State Council on the Arts, and Platsweed Publishing. Don't miss this historic event. New events are still being added, so visit www.nhwritersproject.org for up-to-date festival information and to purchase tickets, or call 603-314-7980. New Hampshire Books by Donna Gilbreth. I was curious to explore the continuing appeal of a New Hampshire novel that seemed like a bit of fluff. Why are people, mostly women, still excited about The Cheerleader by Ruth Doan McDougall after more than 30 years? Excited enough that the author has written 3 more novels in the series about a small-town high school cheerleader? So I read the novel and was swept into a time and lifestyle long departed. The Cheerleader is a coming-of-age novel about a perky and bright teenager named Henrietta Snowy Snow. We first meet her as a sophomore at Gunthwaite High School in 1956. The story chronicles the events and emotions experienced by Snowy and her friends as they progress towards graduation, marking many milestones along the way. Snowy's list of goals is formidable. She wants to be a varsity cheerleader. She wants to snag football player Tom Forbes as her boyfriend. And she wants to go to an elite women's college after graduation. Her desire to succeed is strong. Quote, she wanted to be one of those fabulous varsity cheerleaders cheering at a game that mattered, for the boys who mattered, the crowd caring passionately, and she herself, one of those who led them. End quote. To high school students, these things matter enormously, desires we dismiss as trivial as we age and encounter all the issues of adulthood. Snowy was a typical teenager of the 1950s, striving to conform to her image of a popular girl. But she was also working toward the unusual goal of going to college and having a career. As a sophomore, her image was all important. Quote, Snowy strove to conform, to wear the same clothes as the popular girls, to wear her hair fashionably, to carry her books and speak the slang and know the hit songs all absolutely correctly. End quote. Yet her underlying ambition to obtain a scholarship to Smith or Mount Holyoke College set her apart from the other girls, who were mostly just trying to get engaged to be married. Much of the novel concerns the agonizing interactions between boyfriends and girlfriends and the effect on friendships. An overwhelming concern for girls then was how far to go on a date, whether or when to allow your boyfriend to get fresh, as Snowy and her friends refer to it, or actually reach the big milestone of sexual intercourse. There were rules for these relationships. Quote, then, horrified, she realized she was letting him get fresh on their third evening together, and you weren't supposed to until you were going steady. End quote. Sexual mores of the 1950s are very much part of the novel, from dates at soda shops or movie theaters to the popular parking destinations. All of this sexual experimentation takes place while the seemingly clueless parents are at home in bed. McDougal captures the flavor of the 1950s in a small town perfectly, right down to the songs being played at school dances or on the car radio while the kids are parking. She meticulously describes the wardrobes of the girls, knowing that being dressed just right was very important in high school. Quote, then she selected her best white nylon underpants, her newest bra and white wool socks, and dressed herself in these and her brown wool slacks and the yellow short-sleeve pullover she'd washed last night. She put on her buff-colored loafers. End quote. The author recreates this 1950s town in detail, allowing the reader to feel like a resident of the town and high school. From the basement tunnels in the school to the drive-in theater and football games, we are part of the story as we watch Snowy grow up and graduate high school. Author Ruth Doan McDougal is a native and resident of New Hampshire. The daughter of author Daniel Doan, she grew up in Laconia, the inspiration for the mythical Gunthwaite. Like Snowy, she aspired to go away to college and become a writer. The Cheerleader was first published in 1973, G.P. Putnam's Sons, and was reissued in 1998, Frigate Books, on its 25th anniversary. The popularity of the novel and the desire of readers and the author to find out what happens next led the author to continuing Snowy's saga in succeeding novels. Snowy, St. Martin's Press, 1993, follows Snowy from her first year at Bennington College through marriage, motherhood, and a midlife crisis. Henrietta Snow, Frigate Books, 2004, covers the years 1987 to 2000 as the high school friends enter their 60s. And McDougal recently penned The Husband Bench, Frigate Books, 2007, to chronicle the story of Snowy's best friend, Bev. For a trip into a nostalgic past, which tells a story still relevant today, pick up The Cheerleader by Ruth Doan McDougal. New Hampshire's Literary Treasures, Thomas Bailey Aldrich by Mary A. Russell. In The Story of a Bad Boy, Thomas Bailey Aldrich begins his tale by describing his hero, which he based upon himself. Quote, I may truthfully say I was an amiable, impulsive lad, blessed with fine digestive powers and no hypocrite. I did not want to be an angel and with the angels stand. I did not think the missionary tracts presented to me by the Reverend Wybird Hawkins were half so nice as Robinson Crusoe, and I failed to send my little pocket money to the natives of the Fiji Islands, but spent it royally in peppermint drops and taffy candy. In short, I was a real human boy, such as you may meet anywhere in New England, end quote. 1914 Riverside Press Edition, page 4. Aldrich's creation of a novel for young people about a real boy, as opposed to the idealized version of boyhood perfection typical of literature at the time, was his most lasting mark on American letters. This novel was an inspiration for Mark Twain's Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Children's author was only one aspect of the career of Thomas Bailey Aldrich, however. In his day, Aldrich was esteemed as a writer of short stories, a minor novelist, and was considered by his contemporaries to be an important poet. As editor of the Atlantic Monthly, he lived at the center of a literary renaissance, and his editorial vision guided the magazine to critical, though not financial, success. The fashions of literature, like all fashions, change firmly and frequently, and following his death in March 1907, Aldrich's writings, which did not challenge social or moral conventions and depicted characters with a generally positive outlook, fell out of favor with readers and critics. Aldrich was born in Portsmouth, New Hampshire on November 11, 1836. He was the only child of Elias Taft Aldrich and Sarah Abba Bailey Aldrich, both of whom were descended from colonial New England families. The family moved to New York when Thomas was 5, and then to New Orleans in 1846. In 1849, Thomas returned to Portsmouth to attend the school of Samuel Demeritt in preparation for attending Harvard, where he planned to study under Longfellow. That same year, Elias Aldrich died of cholera, leaving his family in limited financial circumstances and making Harvard an impossibility for Thomas. When he was 16, Thomas Aldrich had his first published poem in the Portsmouth Journal. In 1852, he took a job in the New York City Commission house of his uncle, Charles Frost. By this time, Aldrich's poems had appeared in various periodicals. In 1855, he published the poem, The Ballad of Baby Bell, which brought him enough attention as a writer that he was able to leave the business world and focus on his writing. He worked as a journalist during this period, including as the junior literary critic on the Evening Mirror, as sub-editor of Home Journal, and as associate editor of Saturday Press. His first book, The Bells, a Collection of Chimes, had also been published in 1855. Aldrich was part of the lively literary scene that was New York City at that time. His companions included Edwin Booth, brother of John Wilkes Booth, the sculptor Lont Thompson, and Walt Whitman. Bohemian New York didn't entirely suit Aldrich's New England temperament, though, and he visited both Portsmouth and Boston regularly. When the Civil War broke out, Aldrich became a war correspondent for the New York Tribune, attached to General Blenker's division of the Army of the Potomac in Virginia. His horrific wartime experiences would influence his later writings. In 1862, he left Virginia and returned to Portsmouth. Over the next several years, he wrote and published poetry and short stories, served as managing editor of the Illustrated News, and divided his time between New York, Boston, and Portsmouth. On November 28, 1865, Aldrich married Lillian Woodman, whom he met through the Booths, and the couple moved to Boston. This suited Aldrich, who said, quote, "Though I am not genuine Boston, I am Boston-plated," end quote. In September 1868, just before the birth of his twin sons, Aldrich finished The Story of a Bad Boy, which he had begun while visiting Portsmouth, the river mouth of the book, where he typically spent his summers. The novel first appeared serially in Our Young Folks, beginning in January 1869, and was published as a book in England and the U.S. with an 1870 imprint date. Aldrich published other novels, including Prudence Palfrey, 1874, and The Stillwater Tragedy, 1880. But The Story of a Bad Boy was the one that left a lasting mark on American literature. In January 1870, the Atlantic Monthly reviewed the book. Quote, "Mr. Aldrich has done a new thing in," we use the phrase with some gasps of reluctance, it is so threadbare and so near meaning nothing, American literature. No one else seems to have thought of telling the story of a boy's life with so great a desire to show what a boy's life is, and so little purpose of teaching what it should be. Certainly no one else has thought of doing this for the life of an American boy. The conception of such a performance is altogether his in this case. But with regard to the more full-grown figures of fiction, it is that of the best and oldest masters of the art of storytelling, and it is one that will at last give us, we believe, the work which has so long hovered in the mental atmosphere, a pathetic antenatal phantom pleading to be born into the world, the American novel, namely. End quote. In 1881, he became the editor of the Atlantic Monthly, where he published the work of many of the finest writers of the day, including Longfellow, Thomas Hardy, and Henry James. Under Aldrich, the Atlantic developed a reputation as one of the finest literary journals in the English language. Aldrich left the Atlantic in 1890 and spent his time after that writing and traveling with his family. In 1901, his son Charles was stricken with tuberculosis and died in 1904. His son's death marked the end of Aldrich's writing, and his own death followed shortly in March 1907. A bibliography on Thomas Bailey Aldrich is available as part of our Spotlight on New Hampshire Authors series on our website at www.nh.gov/NHSL/Book Center. Letters about literature. Read, be inspired, write back. Letters About Literature is a reading and writing promotion program of the Center for the Book in the Library of Congress, presented in partnership with Target Stores and coordinated in New Hampshire by the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library. To enter, young readers wrote a personal letter to an author explaining how his or her work changed their view of the world or themselves. Readers select authors from any genre, fiction or nonfiction, contemporary or classic. There are three competition levels in the program: upper elementary, middle school, and secondary. The contest theme encourages young readers to explore their personal response to a book and then express that response in a creative, original way. In 2008, there were 220 letters received from New Hampshire students. 25 semifinalists were selected at the three competition levels by a panel of judges working on behalf of the Library of Congress. These letters were reviewed by a panel of judges here in New Hampshire, and letters by Angela Wang of Nashua, Sydney Spencer of Durham, and Livy Lane of Dover were selected as the New Hampshire Letters About Literature winners for 2008. The deadline for 2009 entries is December 6, 2008. Entries will be assessed on three criteria: content, or the writer's achievement in addressing the contest theme; exposition, or the writer's use of language skills; and voice, the writer's style and originality of expression. State winners will advance to national competition, and the first place winner for New Hampshire at each competition level will receive a $100 cash prize plus a $50 Target gift card, redeemable at any Target store or at Target.com. A panel of judges for the Center for the Book in the Library of Congress will then select six national winners, two per competition level, and 12 national runners-up, four per competition level. Each national winner will receive a $500 Target gift card. In addition, they will win a reading promotion grant of $10,000 for their school or community library. National winners will be instrumental in deciding how the library funds will be spent. The 12 national runners-up will win a $100 Target gift card, plus they will win a reading promotion grant of $1,000 for their school or community library. To obtain the required entry coupon, visit the New Hampshire Center for the Book website at http://www.state.nh.us/NHSL/books/programs/letters.html. Complete contest rules, a teaching supplement to guide students through the reading-writing process, a list of books that inspired last year's semifinalist essays, and winning essays from previous years are also available on the website. Author David Elliott's Reflections on Judging LAL. One person's trash is another person's, well, you know the rest. It's reinforced in one way or another nearly every day of our lives. What, you like that shirt? Or, oh my God, what did you do to your hair? But perhaps the aphorism is nowhere better demonstrated than in the world of writing. Consider this rejection of a collection of poems. Quote, they are quite unremarkable for defects as for beauties, and are generally devoid of true poetical qualities, end quote. Oh, I forgot to mention the author. You might have heard of her, Emily Dickinson. Here's another for Tony Hillerman's The Blessing Way. Quote, if you insist on writing, get rid of all that Indian stuff, end quote. And my favorite for Oscar Wilde's Lady Windermere's fan, quote, my dear sir, I have read your manuscript. Oh, my dear sir, end quote. I, too, have received my share of rejections, not quite as cruel as these, thank heaven, for books that went on to do reasonably well, and some for manuscripts that didn't go anywhere except back into the drawer. But I was most recently reminded of this trash treasure business when I was asked to fill in for a judge at the National Letters About Literature contest. While it was difficult to select the letters I thought the best, it was far easier to spot the worst. One of the first I put into the no pile was a letter that, as far as I was concerned, demonstrated every error that young writers can make. To my ear, it was overwritten, sentimental, full of easy, predictable truths. The kind of thing which sounds good first time through, but on closer inspection was empty of real meaning. What my friend Wendy would say was, quote, mutton dressed as lamb, end quote. You might imagine my surprise, then, when another of the judges chose this very mutton as her favorite. If memory serves, her comments were something like, quote, when I read the letter, I just knew she had to win, end quote. I was floored. I wanted to write the other judge a letter, quote, my dear madam, I have heard your decision. Oh, my dear madam, end quote. In the end, a series of negotiations ensued. The letter didn't win, but it did place in the top three. And really, it's good that it did. Why not? After all, another judge found it praiseworthy. In the end, no one person, even me, could or should make the sole judgment about what makes a piece of writing good. Not an editor, not a reviewer, not a judge, not a librarian. Just think, if that were to happen, we might be denying ourselves the very deep pleasure of reading the next Emily Dickinson, however unpoetical she may be. New Hampshire's Literary Community. America's First Public Library by Brian Hackert, Reference Librarian, Peterborough Town Library. America's First Public Library was founded by a heretic. That momentous event happened 175 years ago, in 1833, in Peterborough, New Hampshire. Reverend Abiel Abbott, who was kicked out of the Congregational Church in Connecticut, became Peterborough's first Unitarian minister and was the primary motivator in the town's creation of a library using public funds. Reverend Abbott's unconventional thinking amounted to heresy for the Coventry Congregational Church. However, in Peterborough, the minister's progressive views were admired, and they helped start a national public library movement that benefits all Americans to this day. As reference librarian at the Peterborough Town Library, I receive a wide range of questions, but one of the most frequent topics of inquiry is the library itself. Whether it's by a local student in person or someone emailing from California, I'm commonly asked if my library's famed reputation as the first of its kind is true. We were indeed the first public library in the United States, though multiple libraries can claim a first status of some sort or another, and a subset of those correctly claim first public status with varying qualifications. Basically, in today's sense of the term, Peterborough had the first public library in the United States, and arguably in the world, because the town used public money to start and maintain a reading collection. The collection was open to anyone without charge, and residents could borrow books to read at home. Nobody operated with that combination of elements before. The Boston Public Library's claim to the title is qualified by size. One section of its website calls it, quote, the first large free municipal library in the United States, end quote. Including any size library, the dates of establishment clearly indicate that Peterborough's 1833 library was founded before Boston's 1848 library. Because there are other first public libraries by differing criteria, Peterborough frequently distinguishes itself with the description, tax-supported free public library. However, many other American institutions flirt with the titles of oldest library and first library. Let's take a look at some of the contenders. The Library Company of Philadelphia was probably the first library in America, yet it was not open to the general public, but rather was patronized by individuals who purchased subscriptions. The Darby Free Library in Pennsylvania may have been the first lending library, allowing patrons to take material home, but it also was comprised of a private membership, although it is today a public library. The private Redwood Library in Athenaeum in Rhode Island also claims the title of first lending library, in addition to, quote, oldest library building in continuous use, end quote. The Franklin Library in Massachusetts was open to the general public, but its financing was from private sources and not from the town until many years later. The Salisbury Children's Library in Connecticut started with public funds, but private funding sustained it afterward, and it didn't serve a representative cross-section of the community. Our neighbor, the Dublin Free Library, was established by private funds. However, it served the general public and claims the title of First Free Lending Library. This may be accurate, since its predecessors either loaned only to private members or allowed public use of material only in a reading room. The Peterborough Town Library allocated public funds to establish a book collection, then voted as a community to sustain the library with tax revenue, and allowed any resident to borrow material without a lending fee. 15 years later, Boston Public Library did the same thing, only bigger. The whole issue of who had the original public library came up early on, and in 1884, researcher Nathaniel Morrison declared that Peterborough was number one. Incidentally, the library did not have its own building until 1893, 60 years after the founding. The term library meant a collection of books rather than a special room or building that held books. Until 1893, the Peterborough Book Collection was kept at various places around town, including the post office and the general store. Consequently, there are libraries that call themselves oldest public library and mean in the same building or on the same property, creating yet another layer in the American library chronology. Using the modern definition of the term public library, I think Peterborough residents and New Hampshireites can legitimately boast of having the first public library in the United States, so I say, go ahead and boast. Narrator's note, the article is accompanied by a list of dates when certain libraries were established, and it reads as follows. 1732, the Library Company of Philadelphia. 1743, Darby Free Library. 1747, Redwood Library and Athenaeum. 1778, Franklin Public Library. 1803, Salisbury Children's Library. 1822, Dublin Free Library. 1833, Peterborough Town Library. 1848, Boston Public Library. End narrator's note. A Celebration of the Kalevala by Pat Frizzella, President, PSNH. The Kalevala, the Finnish national epic, was compiled by Elias Lenrot in the 19th century from folk tunes or runo songs. The meter of these songs is trochaic tetrameter, made familiar to us by Longfellow, a contemporary of Lenrot, in his Song of Hiawatha. Tolkien based his lyrical language of Middle-earth's elves on the Finnish he read in the Kalevala. The themes of the Kalevala are typical of such stories and follow the lines of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, with the birth of the hero, the battles between good and evil, the pursuit of the sacred object, the Sampo, shape-shifting, demons, and magic. However, the heroism celebrated in this epic comes not from physical strength, but through magical songs. The Poetry Society of New Hampshire, PSNH, will celebrate the Kalevala with poetry and music, Runeberg's tarts, and other Finnish pastries on October 11th, beginning at 6 p.m. at ArtStream. The event is free and open to the public. ArtStream Gallery is a wonderful gallery and studio in downtown Rochester, which supports contemporary artists through shows which provide plenty of space and light for each featured artist. In addition, they sell fine art, offer art classes, and web design. For more information, visit http://www.artstreamstudios.com. Music for the celebration will be performed by the Maine Kantelas on Finnish lap harps, the national musical instrument of Finland. The Maine Kantelas form the nonprofit Kantela Laulu Incorporated, http://www.kantelaulu.com/ME%20KANTELES.htm. A 501c3 with a mission to promote education in and awareness of the Kantela and its significance in Finnish culture. They have performed throughout New England and in Canada and Finland. The Poetry Society of New Hampshire is a nonprofit statewide membership organization dedicated to the promotion of poetry. The Society publishes the quarterly journal The Poet's Touchstone, sponsors poetry contests, and hosts poetry readings and workshops. The Society also publishes anthologies, most recently the 2008 Poet's Guide to New Hampshire and The Other Side of Sorrow, Poets Speak Out About Conflict, War, and Peace, and the occasional chapbook. The Society can be reached at poetrysocietyofnh@gmail.com. Award notes. New Hampshire is home to several book awards, and details about each of them, including links to their websites, are included at www.nh.gov/NHSL/books/LITERACYC/awards.html. The Flume, New Hampshire Teen Reader's Choice Award. New Hampshire students in 37 public and high school libraries voted once again to make Stephanie Meyer the winner of the Flume Award, New Hampshire Teen Reader's Choice. Having won the 2007 Flume Award for Twilight, this year Meyer garnered the most votes with her novel New Moon. The nominees for the 2009 Flume Award, which is sponsored by the New Hampshire Library Association, are available on the Flume website. Great Stone Face Award. The 2008 New Hampshire Great Stone Face Book Award was won by Cynthia Lord, a New Hampshire author, for her book Rules. Children in grades 4 to 6 voted at their public libraries and schools. Voting for the 2009 Book Award will take place during Children's Book Week in April 2009. The new list for the 2009 award can be found on the GSF website. Sarah Josepha Hale Award. The trustees of the Richards Free Library are pleased to announce that renowned filmmaker Ken Burns will receive the 2008 Sarah Josepha Hale Award on November 8, 2008 at 7 p.m. at the Newport Opera House. A cinematographer and a writer, Mr. Burns is best known for his work as a director of documentary films, including The Civil War, Baseball, Lewis and Clark, The Journey of the Corps of Discovery, and The War. Isinglass Teen Read Award. The Isinglass Teen Read Award for 7th and 8th graders announced that Natasha Friend has won for 2008 with her book Perfect. She will be coming to New Hampshire this fall to accept her award in person at a local middle school. The current year's list, along with podcasts of book talks, a bookmark order form, and nomination criteria, can be found on the Barrington Public Library's website. Ladybug Picture Book Award. New Hampshire children from preschoolers to those in third grade are invited to vote for the 2008 Ladybug Picture Book Award during November 2008. Details on the award, including printable ballots and tally sheets, and an order form for stickers, are available on the Center for the Book's website. Tally sheets must be received at the State Library by December 1, 2008. The Big Read, Southern New Hampshire Reads, The Great Gatsby, by Steve Vigiano, Manchester City Library. Next spring, people from all over southern New Hampshire will come together to read, discuss, and celebrate The Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel of the dark side of the American dream. The Northeast Cultural Co-op will be organizing the event as part of a larger nationwide program, The Big Read, an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts, NEA. In partnership with the Institute of Museum and Library Services and in cooperation with Arts Midwest, The Big Read is designed to restore reading to the center of American culture. What prompted this program is a study the NEA conducted in 2004 on the reading habits of American adults. The results, published in Reading at Risk, A Survey of Literary Reading in America, paint a grim picture. Reading for pleasure is in decline across all demographic groups, especially younger people. The study also found a positive correlation between reading for pleasure and volunteerism, charity work, and attendance at sporting and performing arts events. In other words, people who read are more likely to be engaged citizens involved in their communities, a necessary component of a functioning democracy. The Big Read tackles this problem by providing grant money and books to nearly 200 organizations nationwide, including two here in New Hampshire. The Northeast Cultural Co-op chose F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, one of 12 American novels being discussed this year. Starting next March, libraries, schools, and other organizations throughout the Granite State will participate by holding book discussions, film screenings, and other events related to The Great Gatsby and the American Dream. Published in 1925, The Great Gatsby is a tragic love story and social commentary on the decadent lifestyle of the wealthy during the Jazz Age, a dizzying period of innovation, prosperity, and changing social mores immediately following the First World War. Through the eyes of narrator Nick Carraway, a Midwestern native out of place among the Long Island elite, we meet his neighbor, young self-made millionaire Jay Gatsby. As Nick and Gatsby become acquainted, Nick discovers that everything about Gatsby, his wealth, his mansion, his decadent parties, is intended for a single purpose, a single dream, to win back the love of Daisy Buchanan, whom he lost years ago. Planning for The Big Read, Southern New Hampshire Reads, The Great Gatsby, is still underway, and details will be available at www.neabigread.org. The communities on board so far include Amherst, Auburn, Bedford, Deering, Fitzwilliam, Francistown, Goffstown, Hooksett, Manchester, Milford, and New Boston. Programs are expected to begin in mid-March. The Poetry Place, Suggestions for Hopeful Poets, by Patricia Farnoli, New Hampshire Poet Laureate. As New Hampshire Poet Laureate, I've been privileged these 2 years to travel around the state doing readings and talking about poetry. Often, after an event, someone who's been writing poetry, perhaps for years, in the privacy of their homes, will approach to ask how they might connect with other poets or get recognition for their work. Or they'll ask my opinion of their poems or those of a relative. Therefore, I thought it might be helpful to offer a few suggestions to hopeful poets. 1. First, I urge you to keep writing. Whether or not poems get published, the process of writing is joyful. It is a fine thing to try to get this big, complex life into words and to communicate the world we see, that specific world each of us perceives, to others. And it is a fine thing to pay close attention to see a thing as if it has never been seen before. 2. Secondly, if you want to write good poems, you must read the poetry of others. Certainly the old masters, but also widely among the many contemporary poets. Buy poetry anthologies. Buy books by individual poets, but read continuously. Study the rhythms and strategies. Absorb them into your own body and mind. Thirdly, consider buying one or two good poetry instruction books. See number 6. 4. Connect with others on the same journey. Join or start a writer's critique group or a writer's group. Go to poetry readings. Go to an open poetry reading and read your poems. 5. Understand that it takes more than talent and deeply felt emotions to write poetry well. You must learn the tools of craft, much as the violinist must learn how to hold his or her instrument, how to move the bow. And this takes study, time, practice. Mary Oliver says it takes 25 years to become a poet. I believe her. But the process itself is enriching. It can change your life. And the poems that get written along the way are often very good and sometimes publishable poems. 6. A few resources to start you on the path. Craft. A Poetry Handbook. Mary Oliver, Harvest Books, 1994. The Poetry Home Repair Manual. Practical Advice for Beginning Poets. Ted Kusser. Bison Books, 2007. Writing Poems, 7th Edition. Michel Boisseau, Robert Wallace, Randall Mann, Longman, 2007. Reading Poetry. How to Read a Poem and Fall in Love with Poetry. Edward Hirsch, Doubletake Books, 1999. Publishing Your Work. 2008 Poets Market, Nancy Breen, Writer's Digest Books, 2008. State Writers Groups. Groups are open to writers, poets of any level. Membership fees are minimal. The New Hampshire Writers Project provides teaching, learning, and networking experiences. http://www.nhwritersproject.org/. Poetry Society of New Hampshire is a nonprofit statewide and beyond membership organization dedicated to the promotion of poetry. Poetry Society of NH at gmail.com. The Seacoast Writers Association holds a writers' conference, offers poetry workshops, contests, and networking opportunities. http://seacoastwritersassociation.org/default.aspx. The Monadnock Writers Group offers fellowship and support to professional writers and to those actively engaged in developing their writing skills. http://www.monadnockwriters.org/. The Big Read, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, by Michelle Moon, Director of Education, Strawberry Bank Museum. Strawberry Bank Museum has received a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, NEA, to host The Big Read in Portsmouth. Their programming will focus on Mark Twain's Adventures of Tom Sawyer and will take place this winter. They are one of 208 organizations to receive a grant to host The Big Read between now and June 2009. The Big Read gives communities the opportunity to come together to read, discuss, and celebrate one of 23 selections from American and world literature. The museum is partnering with the Portsmouth Middle School, the Portsmouth Public Library, and River Run Bookstore in creating their Big Read. Their celebration will kick off at First Night Portsmouth, and during January and February will include book discussions, author visits, programs on childhood adventure, outdoor play, snowshoeing anyone, and boys and girls, good and bad. Portsmouth was the birthplace of Thomas Bailey Aldrich, the creator of the prototype Bad Boy, which made this book a natural choice for this community. Quote, with the latest round of grants, I am proud to say that the Big Read has supported more than 500 public library partnerships, end quote, said Ann Imelda M. Raddis, director of the Institute of Museum and Library Services, the NEA's lead federal partner for the Big Read. Quote, through this program, public libraries continue to demonstrate their value in communities as centers of engagement, literacy, and lifelong learning. I am particularly delighted by the innovative public programming born out of library and museum collaborations. End quote. For more information about the Big Read, including details of events as they are scheduled, please visit www.neabigread.org. Granite State Readers Recommend. We invite readers from around the state to tell us about a book that they would recommend to others. Here is a selection of the recommendations that we received recently. Please check out the complete list of Granite State Readers Recommendations and tell us about a book that you would recommend by visiting our website at www.nh.gov/NHSL/BookCenter/programs. Farmington, New Hampshire, Patricia Frisella. Chaos of the Senses by Ala Mostaganemi, translated from the Arabic by Baria Amar. On the surface, this is a love story set in the political chaos of Algeria in the 1990s. The protagonist is a married woman, a writer, who creates an ideal lover who then appears in her life. Between the confusion of the Civil War and the misty boundary between what is imagined and what is real in the story, the reader gets a true feeling of the chaos experienced by the protagonist. Gosstown, New Hampshire, Michael York, New Hampshire State Librarian. David McCullough, one of the most popular American historians of the last 40 years, often referred to as the master of the art of narrative history, has written about American leaders in numerous award-winning books. His voluminous treatment of Harry Truman in his Pulitzer Prize-winning history, I think, is his best. At more than 1,000 pages, McCullough covers Truman's life in detail, from the machine politics of Kansas City in the 20s and 30s, to his winning the presidency on his own against all odds, defeating Governor Dewey in 1948. No one tells the story better than David McCullough. If you have not read any of David McCullough's books, you need to. If you have not read Truman, check it out at your public library. As we get immersed in the politics of today, it is interesting to look back to the square deal and get a sense of what was happening to America as it emerged from World War II as the most powerful nation on Earth. Peterborough, New Hampshire, Willard Williams, co-owner, Toadstool Bookshops. Coal Black Horse by Robert Olmsted. A 14-year-old boy, accompanied by the protective black horse given him as a gift, is sent, on his mother's premonition, to bring his soldier father home from the battlefields of the Civil War. In this novel, Olmsted's depiction of the incomprehensibly violent world the boy finds himself in feels frighteningly vivid and historically accurate. Robert Olmsted grew up in western New Hampshire, the setting for several of his previous books, including the short story collection River Dogs and his memoir Stay Here With Me. He now teaches at Ohio Wesleyan University. Wilmot, New Hampshire. Sandra Vanderplog, librarian, Colby Sawyer College. Here If You Need Me by Kate Braestrup. This memoir recounts Braestrup's life as she coped with the death of her Maine State Trooper husband and decided to pursue his dream of becoming a Unitarian Universalist minister and chaplain to the Maine Game Warden Service. The writing is lively and engaging, including humorous anecdotes about her four young children, introspective episodes about grief, life, and God, and gripping tales of search and rescue missions. Library of Congress organizes 8th Annual National Book Festival. The 2008 National Book Festival, organized and sponsored by the Library of Congress and hosted by Mrs. Laura Bush, will be held from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, September 27th, rain or shine, on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., between 3rd and 7th Streets. The festival is free and open to the public. Among some 70 authors and illustrators participating this year are Mark Brown, Doreen Cronin, Betsy Lewin, Judy Sierra, Tony Horwitz, Walter Isaacson, Cokie Roberts, Paul Theroux, Neil Gaiman, Catherine Patterson, R.L. Stein, George Duran, John Sheska, Philippa Gregory, Brad Meltzer, Salman Rushdie, Daniel Shore, and Geraldine Brooks. Kay Ryan, recently named U.S. Poet Laureate, will be reading in the Poetry Pavilion. Quote, I invite you, your friends, and your family to join us on September 27th as we all celebrate our shared love of reading, end quote, said Librarian of Congress James H. Billington. Quote, come and be a part of this wonderful national experience, end quote. The festival authors, illustrators, and poets will discuss their work in pavilions dedicated to children, teens and children, fiction and mystery, history and biography, home and family, and poetry. PBS characters and NBA, WNBA players will appear at the festival, including NBA legend and Hall of Famer Bob Lanier. Downloadable podcasts of interviews with popular participating authors will be placed on the Library of Congress website at www.loc.gov/BOOKFEST. The Pavilion of the States, sponsored by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, will highlight reading, literacy, and library promotion activities in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and several American trusts and territories. The Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library will have a table in this pavilion. The artist for this year's festival is beloved children's author and illustrator Jan Brett, whose poster of animals and birds on the National Mall will be available at the festival. Brett, who has written and or illustrated more than 30 books and has more than 33 million books in print, will be among the authors and illustrators speaking in the Children's Pavilion. Narrator's note, the back of the newsletter includes this mission statement. The mission of the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library is to celebrate and promote reading, books, literacy, and the literary heritage of New Hampshire, and to highlight the role that reading and libraries play in enriching the lives of the people of the Granite State. Inside this issue, there's a coupon for the 34th Annual New Hampshire Antiquarian Book Fair, noting that it will take place on Sunday, September 21st, 2008, from 9:30 to 4 at the Everett Arena in Concord, New Hampshire. The coupon is for $1 off admission, courtesy of the New Hampshire Center for the Book. Also inside the newsletter, a listing of the director and advisory board for the Center for the Book. As follows, this is the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library. Mary A. Russell, Director, 603-271-2866, mary.russell@dcr.nh.gov. 2008 Advisory Board, Chair, Andrea Thorpe, New Hampshire Library Association. Vice Chair, Becky Albert, New Hampshire Educational Media Association. Van McLeod, New Hampshire Department of Cultural Resources. Dr. Lionel B. Tracy, New Hampshire Department of Education. Michael York, New Hampshire State Library. Kathy Wirtz, New Hampshire Writers Project. Patricia Farnoli, Poet Laureate of New Hampshire. Rick Agron, New Hampshire Humanities Council. Carrie Thomas, Colby Sawyer College. Maureen Graham, Chillis. Sally Jones, New Hampshire Library Trustees Association. Pat Frizzella, Poetry Society of New Hampshire. Michelle Sampson, Urban Public Library Consortium. Willard Williams, Toadstool Bookshops. Eleanor Strang. And also inside the newsletter, a coupon asking for support for the Center for the Book at the NHSL. It features a coupon asking you to submit name and address, organization if relevant, with the following annual membership levels. Supporter, $5 to $24. Friend, $25 to $99. Contributor, $100 to $499. Patron, $500 to $999. Benefactor, $1,000 and up. Check should be made payable to the Park Street Foundation. Members receive book notes, the semi-annual newsletter. The Park Street Foundation serves as the fiscal agent of the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library and is a tax-exempt 501c3 organization. Your contribution is tax-deductible to the extent allowed by law. Contributions should be sent to the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library, 20 Park Street, Concord, New Hampshire, 03301. End narrator's note. End of book notes. Narrated by David Harris for the Center for the Book at the New Hampshire State Library, September 2008.